You are listening to Agent Court Church's audio podcast. For more information on Agent Court Church, including service times, how to connect, and campus locations, please visit our website at onechurch.to.
Good morning, friends. Welcome to week three of the Likeable series. Pastor Keith started our series by talking about two essential characteristics I'll reference in just a moment, integrity and humility. And this week, I'm going to talk about an essential ingredient if you're going to live a more likable life, if you're going to be the type of person you want to hang out with. Now, this characteristic actually forms and shapes all of your relationships. So think about all of your primary relationships. If you're a follower of Jesus, your primary relationship is one with God. There's also a relationship with a church community, the people that we gather with weekly, whether in small settings or large ones like this. There's relationships between spouses and parents and their children and children and their parents. There's relationships between friends, best friends, work colleagues. There's even relationships between brothers and sisters and brothers. And you kind of get where I'm going? It forms all of our relationships. And before I tell you what this essential trait is that forms our relationships, I want to start by asking you a question. And all I need is 1 minute of honesty today. Okay? Can you manage that? Just 1 minute of honesty. Now, don't shout anything out. Don't raise your hand. Don't embarrass yourself. Here's a question I want you to answer today. What do you really want from your relationships? Think about it. What do you really want from your relationships? I think at one base level, if I was to kind of just do a bit of a survey of the people that are gathered in this room, there'd probably be a lot of great answers. But if we were to really boil this down, what do you really want from your relationships? I think at the base level, we'd all have to admit, we want our way. From the moment we broke into this world, we've wanted our way. That little bundle of joy got his way. That was all part of there's something inside of us with our relationships. We want our way. Now, some of us, through life experience and through maturity, we've learned a few hard lessons sometimes along the way. We've learned that if you always insist on having your own way, you often get in the way of getting what you really want. Did you hear me? We've learned through life that if you insist constantly on having your own way, eventually, we often get in the way of getting what we truly, really want out of relationships. This is kind of how it goes. All humans have been born with this innate need to connect and feel closeness with others. But if you insist on having your way, you can win the argument. You can win the argument. I have had people come to me. I've had parents come to me. I've had parents come to me to ask me to tell their kids that they're wrong. They're wrong. Don't worry, Pastor. I've given them all the Bible verses. Just tell them I'm right and they're wrong. And my first thought is, will that bring you closer together? See, sometimes we get our way, but we don't get what we really want. Even in work and life, we try to get ahead in promotions and we do what we need to do, and it's a dog-eat-dog world and we eat the dogs along the way. And we get to a point where we thought we'd feel significance and success, where people would look up to us, and we get there and we realize, we didn't get what we really wanted, but we got our way. See, when Jesus is going to teach us here today, it's more than getting our own way. He's going to give us a characteristic that shapes all of our relationships and even leadership in life. And this likable characteristic, it's servanthood. It's serving. Wow, okay, I came for that, Pastor. Servanthood? Serving, that's the likable characteristic you're talking about? Well, listen, if you've noticed over the last 2 weeks, there's been a progression to each of the characteristics we talked about. When Pastor Keith was helping to design this course, I thought it was brilliant how he ordered them. Did you notice in week one, what characteristic did we start with? Oh, it's on the screen. More of you should have jumped in at that point. The first week, we talked about integrity. And remember when Pastor Keith was talking about it, he talked about how our hearts and our lives have been broken by sin and even some of our own bad choices, that we begin to live a life of duplicity. where I'm one thing in front of some people, and I'm another thing behind their back, and I'm another thing in front of another group of people. We're not living an integrated life. I'm one thing at church, I'm another thing on Monday, I'm another thing on Friday night. It's not an integrated life. Now, here's the thing. Remember when he was talking about this, this is foundational to all the other characteristics. Because if we don't get wholeness in our hearts, and remember, I loved his illustration of a puzzle, like putting the puzzle pieces back together so we have a complete picture. And if we have wholeness at our foundation, then we can practice what? Humility. Now, humility is something we need integrity to be able to practice it. Jesus said, or God taught us, said that we are to humble ourselves. It's something that we do. And if we lack integrity, if there's brokenness inside of us, now, no one's going to be 100% always integrity-driven. But if our lives are fractured and broken and we live this duplicity in our life, well, it's going to be hard to live a life of humility because we'll be looking for something to puff us up or we'll tear ourselves down. And here's what true humility does. Humility, true humility not only builds us up, but it builds the people up around us. Remember he quoted C.S. Lewis. C.S. Lewis said, humility is not thinking less of yourselves, it's thinking less often of yourselves. When you think less often of yourself, who do you get to think about? Others. This is the doorway to servanthood. We can't do this, friends, unless we're prepared to park our ego and our pride. We won't be able to do what Jesus did unless we're willing to allow and walk through the door of humility. So they're all ordered: integrity, humility, and servanthood. Now, I read this business book years ago. It's a book called Good to Great by a man named Jim Collins. It was a fascinating read. You know, if you're in business or not for profit, great read. What he did is he and his team did research of all the top CEOs in not-for-profits and in profit companies, and he tried to find similarities between those top leaders. What was it that made those companies so successful? What was it that made those charities so successful? They thought, their whole research team thought it would be charisma, that it would be a charismatic leader like Steve Jobs that was leading the way with Apple products that we all know is much better than Microsoft, never mind, whatever that company is. You know, and they thought it'd be a charismatic leadership gift, but it wasn't. When they boiled it down in their research, what they found at the core of all of these great leaders in the most successful companies, they found to their surprise, humility. Humility. And now, it shouldn't surprise us because look what the culture they built in their companies. When you have integrity and you have humility, that allows you then to look at your employees, not like, what can I get out of them? How can I work them to death? How do I extract every piece of creativity and energy from them so they have nothing for home? No. They were marked by a sense of, how do we help our employees grow? How do we help our employees flourish? They serve their employees, and in turn, they serve their clients, their customers. And that heart of service is what caused their businesses to expand. This only comes from humility. Humility makes a pathway for that. So if you have your Bible, we're going to spend our entire time in Mark chapter 10. If you don't have a Bible, you can pull out your phone. You can go to a website like BibleGateway.com or one of those websites and look up Mark chapter 10. Now, I want to, as you're turning to Mark chapter 10, I want to just acknowledge the fact that in this room, we have people at different places in their life in following Jesus. Some people in this room, maybe you're not a follower of Jesus. We're glad you're here today. And listen in as you get to hear a little bit of what should be driving every Christian that Jesus asks them to do. Now, if you're new and you're trying to figure out faith, Jesus never sold a religion to people. He doesn't say, well, just add me to your life and get a little religious juice in on you and everything will go better in life. Jesus' invitation to everyone was to follow him, to become like him, to act like him, to be changed from the inside out. That's the invitation he extends to every human being. So for those of us who are followers of Jesus, what we're going to read today wasn't a suggestion. You get where I'm going? Now, to help us get started in this teaching time, we asked the kids of our church, how do they serve at home? Here's how they responded.
I tidy up my room when I finish playing with my toys.
Wash the windows.
Wow.
And vacuum.
I make breakfast for my mom in the morning and my sister.
Because I have a baby sister, I help my sister. I'll carry her when she's crying. Oh, and kiss her a lot.
Cleaning up, doing the dishes and that.
I help my uncle clean the yard, actually.
Clean the bathrooms.
You clean the bathrooms?
Well, a little bit.
Clean the toilet?
Not the toilet.
Oh, no.
I wash the dishes after I eat my breakfast in the morning.
We put everything, and then we put it in our bag all by ourselves, and we go down there to eat.
I like to help my mom cook.
I clean up. Well, I make their bed sometimes.
I sweep the floors.
Does she pick up the toys?
By cleaning up. When my mom is sick and my dad is sleeping, sometimes I do the dishes all by myself.
Pick up the toys.
I help mommy with baking.
I wash the dishes.
When my brothers are sad, I sometimes help them and play with them until they get happy again.
I even put the clothes straight.
I help my sisters when they drop something.
Cleaning my room so she doesn't have to do it for me.
I do the dishes for my hair and my mom feel happy, and I clean up every day and my mom feel happy.
Help mommy, daddy.
Don't you just want to adopt some of them? Wow. Can I trade? No. Listen, Mark, the Gospel of Mark we're about to read from was written by guess who? Mark. Mark wrote it. Now, Mark wasn't a disciple of Jesus, but Mark was very close to the Apostle Peter, and this is his firsthand account of what happened. Here's the context. Jesus and his followers are headed up to Jerusalem for the last time. And he takes them aside and he gives them the secret sauce to running relationships and running leadership in life. He gives them the secret sauce here. He pulls them aside, sits them down, and he begins to talk to them about what's really important. And he starts with, we're going to pick it up in verse 32. He starts with acknowledging that, hey, things have been going really good, but they're not going to stay good, guys. Here's how they start it. Says this, they, meaning Jesus and his followers, were on their way up to Jerusalem with Jesus leading the way. And the disciples were astonished, while those who followed were afraid. Afraid of what? You've got to read earlier in the chapter, that's your homework for this week, and you'll find out why some of the people were afraid. Goes on to say this, again, wherever you see that word, that's an important word to maybe even circle in your Bible. Again means he's told them this many times, but they're a little bit like us. They need to hear it more than once. Again, he took the 12 aside and told them what was going to happen to him. And he's going to tell them about how they're going to go into Jerusalem this time, but it's going to be so different than it was other times. You got to understand that at this point in history, Jesus and his followers are enjoying their greatest success and popularity. I mean, they are peaked. And he's going to tell them in this moment, listen, guys, it's not going to be the same trip to Jerusalem. Not going to be high fives this time. In fact, our popularity, it's about to plummet. It's about to plummet. And I want to prepare you because I want you to know following me is not always going to be easy. Continues and he says this, we are going up to Jerusalem, he said, and the Son of Man, whenever you see Son of Man, that's referring to Jesus, will be delivered over to the chief priests and the teachers of the law. In other words, guys, you know they've tried to trap me, they've tried to arrest me many times and they failed. This time, they're going to be successful. He goes on to say this, they will condemn him, and he's talking about himself in the third person here, to death, and he will will hand him over to the Gentiles. The Gentiles here, it refers to the Romans who were in charge of the nation at that time. Hand him over to the Gentiles who will mock him and spit on him, flog him, and kill him. 3 days later, he will rise. So picture this. His disciples are following him into Jerusalem. He pulls them aside, and he has this incredibly intimate moment with them. This intimate moment where he's pouring out his heart. This is what's going to happen to me, guys. When we go to Jerusalem, and if you know the story, some of you do, they walk into shouts of praise, but we know it doesn't last long. Instead, everything that Jesus said would happen to him, happened to him. He was mocked, he was spit on, he was flogged, he was killed, and 3 days later, he rose. Then, this is where the story takes a really interesting twist. It says in the very next verse, then, meaning immediately after he had this intimate moment where he's sharing his heart with his disciples of all the terrible things that are going to happen to him, it says, then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, two of his disciples, came to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. Like, really? Like, did you not just hear what I said? Oh, yeah, Jesus, we heard about the mocking, flogging, spitting, killing thing, but hey, could you do us a favor? I mean, if you're a parent, you know exactly this moment. I've had many of these moments when you're sitting at the table and I'm trying to impart something to my boys and it's a serious moment and I'm talking about life or God and I'm sharing, hey, never forget this. The hand goes up. Can we play now? Can I have another cookie? It's like, did you just miss what happened? I just poured out my heart of what's going to happen to me, and you're concerned about, can you do me a favor? Listen to the grace of Jesus. Here's how he responds. He says this. What do you want me to do for you? He asked. And they replied, let one of us sit at your right hand and the other at your left hand in your glory. See, Jesus, okay, mocked, spit, flogged, killed, but we know you're king. So when you come into your glory, you can have the corner office. It belongs to you, but can we have the office on either side of you? They're not thinking about Jesus. Who are they thinking about? Themselves. How can you serve me in this moment so that I can have others serving me when you come into your kingdom? It's about power and authority. It's about having somebody serve them in this moment. I mean, this moment is such a tender moment. And what happens here in the next few verses, which I won't read to you, Jesus explains, listen, guys, you can't even handle what's coming, let alone the offices next to me. You can't handle that. This is where it gets kind of funny. But here's what happens. When the 10 heard about this, so remember, there's 12 disciples. Two of them have asked him this question. There's 10 left over. When the 10 heard about this, they became indignant at James and John. Why? Are they indignant because of their lack of sensitivity towards Jesus? Like, James and John, how could you ask for a favor when Jesus just talked to you about what's going to happen to him? Don't you understand the weight he's carrying? Don't you understand what's facing him? No, that's not it. They're indignant because they didn't think of it first. And if you know, they all begin to clamor for power and position and authority. They want to be served. Hey, wait, I want to sit in your right hand. No, I want to sit in your left hand. Man, these are men acting like sometimes men. And in this context, Jesus sits them down. Jesus sits them down. And he begins to say to them, listen, pay attention, guys. You've missed this over and over. I've said this again and again to you. And he begins to spell out, how do you run the relationships? How do you run leadership principles? How do you do this? How do you become more likable? And it's servanthood. Here's what he says. He says this. Jesus called them together. Come here, guys. Come on. Let's talk. You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them. Next, and their high officials exercise authority over them. He's saying, guys, you know how the world operates. You understand how leadership works in the world. You know, if you're in charge, serve me. If you got a position of authority, you leverage it for whose best interest? Your best interest. If you're the one that's more mature in the relationship or you got there first, Well, then serve me. And Jesus says, you understand what the pattern of this world is like. He's talking about really math. Now, some of you have been stressed since this came out because you saw that word. And you're like one of the kids in our first service. What does math have to do with church? But we have kids in the room, right, parents? So math is a very important thing, is it not? And everything you learn in math, you'll use every day in life, right? Calculus, whatever. Here's the thing. He's talking about the type of math we do every day, whether you're 6 years old, 6 months old, or 60 years old. See, all of our relationships are transactional in nature. And whether it's between us and God, us and our church, us and others, there's always this transactional thing. And he says, most of us, Jesus is pointing out to them, most of us do me addition. We do me addition. And this is what this looks like. Everyone does this. Everyone does this. Me addition. It starts with who? Me. Now, I'm going to do a younger version of me because I still fantasize of the day when I had hair. And that's me. Now, in me addition, when it comes to relationships, when it comes to leadership or anything, it's me plus, well, plus everybody. Plus Shelly. Shelly, oh, there you go. You look beautiful, hon. My boys, people that I know, friends, the church, God even. It's me plus them equals, well, whatever I'm getting out of it. So sometimes everything's going right and I'm happy. God, oh, I love my relationship with God because why? Well, he gives me forgiveness. He gives me grace. He makes me feel better. He picks me up when things are wrong. But what if God asked me to do something I don't want to do? I'm either mad or sad. It's the same in our relationships with others. We get married. Some of us get married. In your relationship with someone, you had expectations, and they fell short of your expectations. And some weeks you're happy, and other weeks you're sad or mad. Sad or mad. It's the same in your relationship with the church. If it's you plus what your church can do for you, if they're not doing for you what you want, you're going to be mad or sad. Mad or sad. Because it's not about what you're doing for that. It's always about what you're getting out of it. When you have best friends in life or brothers and sisters or even parents in life or aging parents in life who maybe can't add as much to you, if the math is me plus what you can do for me, if it's coming up short, I'm mad or sad. If it's coming up the way I want it to be, well, then I'm happy. And Jesus says, that's how the world does that math. That's how they do it. Here's what he says to them, though. He says, not so with you. Not so with you. You don't do relational math that way. You know who does? People who don't follow me. People who don't follow me do relational math that way. They do me addition. Always. It starts with me and whatever I want or need. Then I'll tell you how I feel. But he said, not so with you. That's not the way I've asked you to do it. So here's what he says, actually. He says, not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to be great among you. Great translation for that would be whoever wants to be the mature one in the relationship. Whoever wants to be the mature one in the relationship, whoever wants to be the leader, whoever wants to be great among you, must be your, oh, that barely came out of your mouth, must be your servant. It's kind of ego deflating. Your ego's getting pushed down. Must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be, again, it was very hard to say, slave of all. I mean, friends, this is interesting. Jesus is saying, if you're going to follow me, this is what it's going to look like. Jesus is teaching us to do a different type of addition. Here's what Jesus is teaching us. The world does me addition. Jesus invites us to do you addition. Can someone turn to the people next to you and just say, that's you. That's you. Now, here's what happens with you addition. It starts with not me. It starts with You starts with my church. It starts with God. It starts with others in my life, my friends, my colleagues at work. It starts with them. Plus, me, what I can bring to them. Because Jesus is talking about a different level of service. He's saying this, I've given every one of you gifts. Some of you have the gift of emotional health. And you take it for granted because you don't struggle with emotional health like some people do. But those who do, they would trade you in a moment. Some of you have the gift of mental health. Some of you have a gift of physical health and strength. Some of you have the gift and talents, your physical, your abilities in life, the intellect you have, the spiritual maturity and wisdom you've been blessed with. All of those things are gifts. And he's saying, in my kingdom, I want you to leverage all those gifts for the benefit of others. All of a sudden, others come first, plus what I can bring to them, and that equals, anyone got a guess? I'll tell you why. In me edition, I am fickle. I am sad, mad, and happy all in the same week. Why? Because everything, my condition and disposition is driven by other people's ability to add to me. The ability of God to add to me. What have you done for me lately, God? Or the ability for a church to add to me. I won't even go there. Or the ability for somebody else to add to me. And so I find myself fickle. In one moment, I love this piece. I don't love that piece. But when you do you addition, it always ends with this because nobody can rob you of the joy of serving others. Some of you know exactly what I mean. When you give to someone, you know, I've tried to practice a discipline in my life. I've not always done it consistently, but I've always tried to practice even practicing generosity, giving stuff to people that they don't know it comes from me. Do you know why I do that? Yeah, I want to bless, but I also do it for me. I'm pushing back against that thing that needs a pat on the back for every good thing I've done. Oh, well done. I'm allowing it to fuel me from the inside out, that it's just a joy to be able to give, that God has blessed me with resources enough to be generous with people around me. Nobody can rob me of that joy. Even their response to my serving can't rob me of that type of joy. And Jesus invites us to do this you addition. To add. Now, I want you to imagine our world right now as it is. Just imagine the globe that we're living in and the age and time we are if the leaders of this world practice you addition. Can you imagine if our prime minister or the president of Mexico or the prime minister of England or the president of the United States took all that they were given, all the power and authority, all of the great giftings and skills that they had, and they leveraged it for the benefit of others? Like, sign me up to be a part of that. But why are we cynical? Because we kind of know they got a little bit of this that's about them. But Jesus calls us to something completely different. Can you imagine marriages where spouses are competing to outserve each other? You know, some of us are a few service acts away from healing broken relationships. Just a few moments of serving somebody else to heal a broken relationship. Can you imagine a church community? I love this, where the young are busy serving those who are older and honoring them. And the old are busy serving those that are younger, so that all of a sudden it becomes less about your preferences. Because when you're young, you're going to use your energy and your abilities to serve and respect those who have paved the way for you. And when you're older, here's the interesting thing. How can you serve younger generations? Well, you can pray for them. I was so proud of watching our youth up here leading worship. They're facing things in this world that my generation never had to face. I can't imagine if you could walk in their shoes for a week, how you might feel facing some of the things they face every week. So I'm so proud of them that they're in our church. Just so proud of them. But can you imagine if we could pray for them? Or maybe we could even give up some of our preferences for them. Because why? We're thankful that they're serving the Lord and that they're finding Christ here. I mean, that's you edition. Me edition is completely different. The young is looking out for themselves. The old is looking out for themselves. And the middle people, well, they're caught in the middle. But when we practice you edition, all of a sudden, we're looking to give. What can I give? What can I bring to this? So here, I'm going to end this. We're almost done. But here's your take home. How do you practice a life of servanthood, whether at school, at work, at home, or even in a church community? So I've got one question for you to memorize this week. This is the only thing you need to take from the message. Jesus is going to have a few more things to say in just a moment, but here's a question that could change the course of every relationship you're involved with. Here's the question. Can you say it with me? What can I do to help? Say it again. What can I do to help? Do you know this? Like kids, listen up, kids, if you're in the room. Could you imagine going home, and when you get home, you turn to your parents and you say, what can I do to help? Or you go to school, and you see your teacher, and you say, teacher, what can I do to help? Can you already know that your whole tone of the classroom or the house would change? Teenager, what if after lunch today, you went home, and after you said to mom, what can I do to help? Now, if she falls on the floor, it's not a heart attack. It's just it's a bit of shock and awe in that moment. But all of a sudden, it changes the nature of your relationship. What if when you see your teenagers acting out and they're finding difficult, what if you turn to them instead of just correcting them, you say, hey, what can I do to help here? There's some pressure and stress you must be under because what's coming out? Maybe that's not acceptable, but there's something going on there. What can I do to help? What would that look like, sir, in your marriage? If you could set aside a little bit of your ego and maybe lean into your spouse and say, listen, what can I do to help? Or a mom. Moms serve their children. I tell you, I've never seen a mom, you have to encourage a mom to serve their children. Sometimes they overserve. But what if you turn to your husband? He said, what can I do to help? What if we turn to God and we say, God, not my agenda, but your agenda. What do you want me to do to help? It changes the nature and the climate of every relationship we're a part of. So Jesus has his disciples. They're all sitting there listening to him. And in verse 45, he kind of ends his teaching. And here's what he says. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served. Even the Son of Man did not come to be served. If you're a follower of Jesus and it's all about you, you're putting yourself above Jesus. Because Jesus didn't come to be served, but to serve. But to serve. See, the gospel is beautiful. God looked down on his creation and he asked that question, what can I do to help? Because we were broken and mired and lost in our sin and we couldn't help ourselves. So what did he do? Well, he came to give his life as a ransom for many. Friends, to be honest, this is a great litmus test for my life. How much did Jesus give? Sometimes we have trouble giving a couple hours twice a week. Sometimes we have difficulty giving a moment to someone in our own home and serve them. Sometimes it's really hard to sign up for something. It could be even in the church, serving with the kids every second week. It's just like, I can't commit to that. I get you're all busy. I said this a few weeks ago, I've never met a Torontonian that's not busy. Even the retired people want to retire from being retired, right? Because it's busy. But what if we all ask that question? How can I help? So last weekend, it was my privilege to get away with the board of this church, and we spent a couple of days in Coburg, actually, praying for you, praying for this church. I just admire the group of people that God's put around that table with their skills and abilities and their heart. And then earlier this week, the staff, we got away for 2 days and we prayed for you. And you know, I was driving home Thursday night after the retreat, and I had to come back to the church to work and do some things, but I'm driving home, and it just struck me in that moment. Look at the quality of people on the staff, on the board. You know, you don't get to interact with all of them, but the word servant, boy, that characterizes them. How can I help? What can I do to help? And friends, we'll never be able to be the type of board or staff that is able to do every preference in the room. I know that. But I do know the heart of this church. How can we serve you? How can we help you? Man, if we all adopted that same thing, why can't we impact our city? Why can't we change the climate of our homes? Why can't you change the coldness of a marriage relationship? Why cannot a relationship between be repaired between a father and a son if we all came at it with it, how can I help? Really, what can I do? Friends, if you always insist on getting your way, you're going to get in the way of what you truly, truly do want. I'm going to invite you to stand right across this room. In a moment, I'll close in prayer, but we're going to sing that song we sang earlier, Christ is enough for me. Because here's the key, friends, the integrity and the humility and acknowledging that Christ is our all in all. So I don't need to look to others to get what only Christ can give me. Peace and forgiveness and grace and joy and patience and long-suffering and gentleness, because those are the fruit of the things, the fruit of the Spirit inside of us when we've experienced the love of Jesus.
Make sure you don't miss a message by subscribing to this podcast. All creative content and production for this podcast is provided by the One Church Creative Team.